Are you listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other platform where you can leave a rate or review? Do you like what we're doing? If the answer to all of that is yes, please consider quickly giving us a 5-star rate. And if you wouldn't mind leaving us a nice review, we greatly appreciate that as well. Okay, let's do this.
Hello, welcome to the Ghosts of Harrenhal. My name's Simon.
And I'm Mikkeli.
Thank you for joining us for episode 178 of our chapter-by-chapter book review of A Song of Ice and Fire by George Martin. Today we'll be discussing chapter 34 of A Storm of Swords, that's Arya 6.
And as you probably know by now, we're going to chat about the chapter and try not to spoil any future plot points for you. And hopefully we're going to provide you some entertainment along the way.
We'll summarise what happened, discuss our thoughts on it, provide some useful background, compare it to a television show, indulge in a little pedantry, and cover some relevant news and listener correspondence. Be sure to check out the show notes, it'll provide you some additional information about the characters and geography of this chapter. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. It's good to see and hear you. We've had some serious technical difficulties, but it seems to be worked out.
I think so. Things are clicking along here, so I'm using a different mic and a different computer. That's how much problems we've had.
That's right. I think we have matching mics, though, finally, right?
Mm. Yeah, so any differences in the quality of our recording now are down to our voices.
Yes, basically.
Yes. Yeah. People will suddenly realize how lacking in depth and melodiousness my voice really is.
Now that they can actually hear it clearly.
I met a guy at work the other day. I don't know if I told you this. I met a guy at work the other day who was born in the same year as me. He was born in England. He has a son who has his 20th birthday this year. And this guy's name was Simon.
Nah. At work.
He worked on the floor below me in my building.
Right, directly below you?
Not directly. not that weird, but...
Wow. That Isn't is, that yeah. Well, yeah, it's like, did he look like you?
He looked really old.
Okay, clearly not. No. Clearly, you've aged much better than he has.
I was like, oh, please be older, please be older. Damn it, you're the same age.
Same age. Oh, yeah. That's the worst.
But it was a guy who knew us both was talking to me, and he was like, ah, this is the moment I've been waiting for. He said, Simon, this is Simon.
Simon, meet Simon. Simon, mm-hmm. meet Simon. Well, that's so fun. Except for the fact that you said he looked really old.
Not really old. Just like, you know, I mean, when you get to, you won't know this, Mikkeli, but when you get to my age, your peers are beginning to break down a little bit.
Uh-huh. Yes.
They're getting a little crusty. And
this Thankfully, guy... I'm so much younger than you. I haven't had to deal with any of this yet.
This guy Simon, he was perfectly ordinary looking person, but the kind of person who I'd peg at being a certain age, you know, and that certain right. age being at least 12 years older than me. But sadly, no.
Oh, the disappointment when he said, "Oh, I was born in the same year as you." Mm-hmm. No, you weren't. No.
The more we talked, the more things that were in common between us. It was very strange.
Yeah. Wow. Fascinating. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll say, you know,
Do you have a joke for us, by the way? In the banter, it says joke.
I do. Well, so we had a listener reach out to us, and in the correspondence with this listener, whose name was John, delivered a joke that I thought was rather humorous, and I thought I would tell it here.
The dream is coming true, Mikkeli. Others are writing every bit of this for us these days.
That's right. So this is the joke that John provided me with. What does Ned Stark say at the end of any long night?
Go on.
I must be heading home. Well done, John.
Yes, I like it.
And I had a second joke that a friend of mine's daughter used on me at the Super Bowl party that I was at. She said, "Hey, I have a question for you. Is butt cheeks one word? Or should I spread them apart?"
That's great.
Simon and I work with an editor, and we all had lunch this week. Not Simon, of course. He didn't show up. But I turned to our editor friend and said, "Hey, I have an editing question for you." And the first words out of her mouth was, "Oh, for F's sake." I was like, well, it's not a work editing question. It's just a general editing question.
It's a joke, basically.
Right. But she got a good kick out of it when I got to the punchline.
So it was the Super Bowl. I didn't watch any of the Super Bowl because I was busy with work. And meanwhile, Carson watched the Super Bowl drinking beer. I was like, something's gone wrong in my life here.
You're right.
The roles have been reversed all too well.
You want to switch roles here. Yes. Well, I have been really embracing this whole Apple stuff. Just this week, I got a new Apple Watch.
Oh my god! I remember when you were just one of the good guys, and
I know
you have abandoned.
I've been corrupted. Yeah. I have. Now let me say, it's not new. It's new to me. It's not new. It was a Christmas present we got Ethan several years ago. He never once wore it, so. I was like, hey, if you're not going to ever use that, why don't you bring it home and I will take it. And so he did. And the reason I asked for it is because I've been using my Fossil Android watch, which worked fine when I had an Android phone.
Is it?
It's now causing problems.
Is the watch so old it is now a fossil, or is that kind of a brand of some sort?
It's a brand.
Okay, gotcha,
a brand.
Gotcha.
Yes, it was I just got it two Christmases ago, so it's just over a year old, and it was working fine, but then I switched to an iPhone and it started having issues. So I switched to an Apple. This is what Apple wants, you know. They restrict everything, cause problems with all other devices, so that you just continue to conform in the Apple vein, and I keep falling right into their trap.
Mm-hmm. You do.
So, speaking of Ethan, though. You know what he's doing, that kid of mine?
He is quitting his job and he's going to become an artist.
Yes, exactly. Wow. How did you know? That kid is skiing in Vermont. He flew to Boston yesterday and then met some friends and some friends from that area. And then they drove to another one of his friends' ski chalet in Vermont. And it just made me realize how different my childhood and his childhood. Although he's not a child,
but
in his 20s, but
yeah,
my young life and his young life, I didn't have any friends that owned even a RV, let alone a ski chalet.
Yes. So we've done too well by our kids. I guess so.
And you know what advice I gave him? I gave him one piece of advice before he left.
It was probably, look where you're going.
That's what it was. Yeah. I look in the direction in which you are skiing. Yeah. Of course, because Simon's son did not follow that advice, and he ended up with a broken leg on a ski slope.
Were we recording the podcast when that happened, or was it pre-podcast? It's pre, I think, because he was 15, so it'd be 4 years ago. So it's pre-podcast.
Yes.
That was a dark time.
It was, indeed.
I don't know if I told you. I think I might have told you this, but probably not the listeners, because it's not that interesting. But my brother-in-law has moved to Boone, North Carolina, and he works in the hospital. And he works with the surgeon who worked on Lucas, who operated on Lucas.
Oh.
And
a small world.
And the surgeon adamantly... maintains that he remembers us.
Oh, okay.
But I mean,
and he said I can't forget that leg.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, which rather belies his, oh, I do this surgery all the time, you know.
Right. Meanwhile, he's studying up. How do I've never seen one like this before. Do I take it off or do I screw it back on.
This is kind of funny, but it's also giving me palpitations.
All right, let's change the subject. What's going on with you?
Not a lot, I don't think.
You met another Simon.
I met.
That's about it. That's enough for a week, right?
That's a big week. All right, let's get down to business. How did we leave Arya Stark? The last few times, to be honest, we saw Arya, she and her Brotherhood Without Banner escorts had been roaming the Riverlands in search of Beric Dondarrion to get orders on what to do with her. Ransom her to Riverrun. Just
right.
Executive decision here.
Yeah, I'm not sure that needs to come from the top.
But no luck on that front. However, at the end of the last chapter, she did discover a prisoner would be joining her who was an answer to her prayers. McKelly, why don't we find out who it was?
I think we shall. And of course, this summary is provided to us by the one and only Jenny of Old Stones.
I actually think there might be two of them because they do so much.
That's true. Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah. It's appropriate that it's coming Valentine's Day week.
Right.
Because I know it's a busy time for Jenny.
It sure is. It sure is. She survived.
With all those admirers sending her.
That's what's got her so busy. I love how Jenny always titles her summaries as well. Yes. This one's called The Scarecrow, the Dog, and the Angry Squirrel.
Very nice.
So it goes like this. Harwin removes Arya's hood while Lem unhoods Gendry. They find themselves in front of a massive fire pit in a large cave within a complex tunnel system. Greenbeard tells Arya that they have finally reached the wizard. It's Thoros of Myr, and he's barely recognizable to her.
The Mad Huntsman brings Sandor Clegane. It's Sandor Clegane.
It's Sandor Clegane.
Forward. And Thoros tells him he is a false priest no more, but a true servant of the Lord of Light. The Hound parries words with Thoros and several men of the Brotherhood before Lord Beric Dondarrion approaches, also barely recognizable, with a multitude of healed wounds.
Sandor mocks him as well and tells the gathered men to get on with killing him. The Brotherhood begin shouting a litany of names, all people killed by the Lannisters during the war. There are many noblemen and women, but also many commoners from the small towns and villages in the Riverlands. Sandor is infuriated, honestly, when is he not, and says he wasn't personally responsible for any of those deaths. They can kill him if they want, but it won't be justice. Arya dashes forward and shouts at the Hound that he killed Micah.
After a brief conference, Thoros and Beric decree that Sandor will face a trial by combat before the Lord of Light. Beric calls for his squire, Ned, to help him remove his armor, as the Hound will not be wearing any either. Sandor is handed his sword belt by Thoros, but warns him that he will be feathered with arrows if the Hound tries to flee. After a brief prayer to R'hllor, the combatants prepare to fight.
Beric sets his sword on fire, but it's no trick this time. During the battle, Sandor is set aflame, but he prevails and Beric is killed. Again.
Wait,
Arya angrily ponders the existence of gods and divine justice, since she knows he's guilty.
Thoros calls for a few brothers to help him move Beric, and they carry him off to a dark tunnel. Arya snatches up a dagger and confronts the Hound, who admits to killing Micah, but the dagger is confiscated by Lem. She screams at the Hound to go to hell. Arya hears a feeble voice claim that he already has, and turns to see a resurrected Beric Dondarrion, alive, if not well, standing behind her.
I told you we'd see a miracle last week.
You did.
I told you last week we'd see a miracle this week, I should say.
Yes, okay. I will say, actually, thank you, Jenny. It was great.
Yes, thank you so much. Great job.
I did actually remember what the miracle was, weirdly. I knew.
Well played.
When we come to the comparison with the television show, I think of all the chapters in the book, maybe since the prologue of Game of Thrones, this is the one that's most carefully captured. It is verbatim. Nothing different between the book and the show here.
Wow.
Yeah. It's strange how similar it is. I mean, the only kind of minor difference was that she already knew it was Sandor Clegane before this. She bumped in the TV show, she'd already seen who it was, and he'd announced who she was.
Okay, so there was no surprise.
No surprise at this point.
Coming.
Yeah. But everything else, I mean, even down to the Hound's shield being on fire, it was all very, very similar. It made me wonder, I'm sorry, I'm preempting everything I'm going to say later on, but it makes me wonder if there's kind of an importance to this scene, which I'm forgetting from reading it, because apart from Beric coming back to life, which obviously is pretty substantial as these things go, that this feels like a, you know, just a tootling along, you know, the narrative is just moving along chapter, but it doesn't feel particularly portentous other than Beric's coming back to life. And you could have had Beric coming back to life quicker and easier than this.
True. Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, aside from that miracle, that a man who appeared to have been killed was then standing and talking, the chapter was fairly unremarkable.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, in no way bad. I mean, it was a very interesting chapter and well done. And the fight was good and the whole thing was enjoyable. But yeah, just weird that it was so carefully reimagined in the TV show.
Yeah.
Because obviously, I've watched the rest of the TV show and I've read the books as far as they go. And I don't remember why this is so particularly important. It doesn't seem that important to me, but yeah.
Well, probably to Beric it is.
Well, but even for Beric, it's kind of like, you know, it's work a day.
Oh, that's true. Been there, done that.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I thought we'd start the discussion with an idea that Vanessa, who...
It's like we know our listeners by first name.
I know, mm-hmm. Right? Join the Discord server and join the Buy Me a Coffee sustainers, and we will know you by your first name.
Yeah, yeah. there's a new lady called Renee, is it?
On there? Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But she's visiting us from the past. She hasn't caught up.
Right. Yeah. That was, yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure. Renee could also be a man.
It could be.
Name,
sorry,
right?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. I was presuming.
So I'm not sure if Renee is a man or a woman, but... yes, Renee said it was very disorienting talking to us in the present when he or she is listening to us in the past. and I said, it's funny because so many of you know the details of our lives better than we do in some instances, because I said, especially you have forgotten, you know, much of the things that were happening at the time.
I actually read that you said that. And got slightly annoyed and then forgot.
Then you forgot that you were annoyed.
So what was Vanessa's idea anyway? I interrupted.
So Vanessa's idea was to talk about the parallels between the religions that you run into here in this chapter.
Right. So first of all, we got a trial by combat, which we've had a trial by combat before. Which was Tyrion in the Eyrie. But that was... So there we got two religions, both of them having the same idea of having a trial by combat to decide someone's guilt or innocence. Because this is... Relor is the referee for this trial by combat.
Yeah. You know, we've not heard Melisandre say whether or not that's something that Relor does, you know, breaks ties. Yeah.
Well, she had her poison drinking contest with Crescent.
Yes, she did. We know how that ended. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you often, you know, throughout the history of Westeros, at least since the Andals arrived, you associate a trial by combat with the Seven, you know, with the faith of the Seven.
But you know, I will say, and this actually goes to a lot of, I mean, if you think about Christmas, obviously you think it's a Christian holiday, but it very much is a adaptation of pagan holidays that predate it.
Right.
And so if you think about it, these people who are having this trial by combat were raised in the religion of the Seven. You know, they, apart from Thoros, you know, they're newly converted to Relor. So they're bringing their traditions and imposing them on the new religion. It's not necessarily the religion that's bringing the trial by combat. It's the people bringing the trial by combat and applying the religion to it, you know.
Sure. Yeah. But then, you know, right before the trial begins, actually the Hound starts to go toward Beric, and Thoros stops him and says, no, we're going to pray first. And he says a prayer to Relor, which is very much a prayer to Relor. There's no bones about that one.
No.
And you know, the setting where they are in this cave, there's weirwood roots running through it, white weirwood roots. And, you know, there's a kind of an earthy, root-heavy, old god type feeling here.
Interesting, yes. Very. I hadn't really thought about it, but yeah, it's absolutely true. all we really need is someone to leave their newborn baby boy outside for the others, and we've covered everyone, really.
Right, yeah. Speaking of old, you know, earthy, rooty places here, one thing I wanted to mention as well that's actually not in the on the sheet, but it was something I thought about, is I just want to kind of wanted to throw out a reminder. Arya asks someone where they are, and whoever it is says, this is an old place, deep and secret, a refuge where neither wolves nor lions come prowling. And then Arya kind of gets shivers and remembers the wolf dream she had where she was tearing off a man's arm. And so I went back and looked, and she's referring to the wolf dream she had in Arya 1 when she dreamed that she was with a wolf pack and they were attacking the brave companions that were hunting her, Gendry and Hot Pie. As best I can tell, that's the, because she tore off a man's arm in that dream. So I'm pretty sure that's the one.
Right. I was thinking about the fact that Thoros is seeing Gendry for the first time. And that has a bit of a, there's a potential plot point there, because Thoros was best buddy drinking friends with none other than Robert Baratheon, who, as we know, is the father of Gendry, and Gendry is a dead ringer for him, we've heard. So I wonder if Thoros... Right. Now, the one thing is, Thoros appeared somewhat since he was Robert's drinking buddy, and so maybe he doesn't remember as clearly as he might. There's definitely a potential for him to spot it. He doesn't in this chapter, as far as we could tell. There was no mention of it.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, we know that Thoros used to go to Tobo Mott's smithy to get cheap swords to light on fire for his melees. And we had wondered if, you know, why go to a master armorer for cheap swords? Could it possibly because he knew the secret of
Gendry's
father?
That's right. We're not necessarily just relying on him recognizing Gendry as looking like Robert, but he may know Gendry. In fact, he probably does know Gendry. The reason he was going there was to check up on Gendry.
Possibly. I mean, why else go to a master armorer get cheap swords? Well, you know, you could get them from the castle armory, probably, if you needed them.
Yeah. So it's in some ways it's surprising he didn't react.
Yeah. There was at the beginning of the chapter. There was you know, Arya was looking at Thoros and Tom discussing, you know, talking like off in a distance, and something Tom said made Thoros look over, and she thought he was looking at her, but maybe he was looking at the teenage boy standing next to her.
Good point. It's possible. I hadn't thought of that, but yeah. So yes, we do finally find out who the prisoner was, and it was kind of as we speculated, Sandor Clegane, the Hound, who we discover was betrayed by his own kind. Right? He was captured because the dogs barked at him, and
The dogs picked up his scent, and that was we got a little bit of clue before they said. Before the name Sandor Clegane was uttered, because Thoros said betrayed by your own kind when the Mad Huntsman said the dogs picked up his scent. So, but then like the next sentence it was Sandor Clegane. So in case you haven't figured it out yet.
So, it's interesting. I think obviously Thoros's reputation is one of heavy drinking and wild partying, and also fearsome and brave. You know, I mean, he was, you know, first into the breach at the Battle of Pike.
That's right. And he won the melee at the Hand's Tourney, I believe.
But now he seems a changed man. He says he admits that he was a false priest of Relor, but no longer. Now he is a true priest of Relor. And, we didn't see what happened at the end of this chapter, but if it was Thoros who had Beric's body dragged away to a tunnel, and then Beric came back out of that tunnel. So if Thoros is spiriting the same kind of magic that Melisandre has at her disposal, it does appear that that would be a kind of thing that would make, you know, he's doing a good job of it. He's definitely not a false priest, if that's the kind of trick he can pull. He's the real deal.
We'll be right back.
Hello, friends. Are you ready to make some unforgettable memories? Well, if so, consider the Marriott Bonvoy program. Discover the perfect destination for your summer getaway and unlock exclusive deals on luxurious accommodations. With our affiliate partnership, you'll enjoy unbeatable savings and a seamless booking experience. Don't let summer slip away. Visit Marriott Bonvoy today and make this vacation season one for the books. Use our Ghosts of Harrenhal affiliate page to check it all out and buy Bonvoy points or give some as a gift. The link to our page is in the show notes. Right, right. Yeah, the fact that he considered himself a false priest previously certainly would explain, up to this point, the vast difference between him and Melisandre. He was the party, you know, life of the party fun guy, and now he looks and seems to behave a lot more like Melisandre does, a lot more serious and a lot more...
Yeah, so there are interesting parallels, if you think about it, because basically what we've got is we've got one sort of, not kingly figure necessarily, but one leader figure in Stannis / Beric, and then one priest who's attached themselves there too, and then sort of followers around. But it does feel like Melisandre's followers, quite a lot of them are being coerced into being followers. Whereas here, it definitely feels like they've seen what he can do and they've become believers, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, now that you say that, how many of Melisandre's followers have seen her birth a shadow demon?
The one eyewitness did not become a convert.
Right, he did not. Yeah, Thora says something like, I'm not the false priest that you once knew, talking to Sandor. Lord of Light is now in my heart. And the power... Then he says, powers long asleep are waking, and forces are moving in the land. He saw it in his flames. And, you know, that could be legit, because we know others are stirring and mm-hmm. dragons are alive yeah. again. So, you know... of course, I don't know that I'd be talking to things you saw in your flames when you're talking to the Hound if you want him to seriously.
I think Sandor takes the flames seriously. He's just not a big fan of them.
He does, yes. Right, that's a good distinction right there.
Sorry, go on.
Yeah, it would be really intriguing to see Melisandre and Thoris of Myr meet up. I would really hope we get a chance to see that happen. At this point, it doesn't look like, you know, there's a clear path for that. But it'd be really fun to listen to them maybe trade secrets and discuss the Lord of Light. And like, wait, you can
secret
do that?
Handshake.
I can't do that.
Yeah.
I can do this. Can you do that? Yeah.
She tells him about the Shadow Demon. He's like, well, where's that supposed to come out of? So the Hound refers to the Brotherhood as... brave companions, which is a bit cheeky, because
oof,
oh yeah.
Yeah, them's fighting words.
I think Sandor's okay with a fight. I think that's exactly what he wants at this point.
Yes, I think so. Yeah, that's, you know, I get what he's getting at. He sees them as a band of broken men, you know, that are just doing whatever they're up to, kind of like the Brave Companions, you know? He doesn't know whether or not they're mercenaries and, you know, or... They are considering...
Ransoming.
Ransoming Arya to her mother.
There's a scene in the show where Arya is talking to Thoros, and he says, we're going to ransom you to River, and that's what we're going to do. And she says something like, then you're no better than, and lists somebody that you're no better than. And he's like, we're going to look after you. We're going to take care of you. She's like, yeah, but you don't need to ransom me. He said, yeah, but we do need the gold. You know? So.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, there is a difference between how the Brave Companions would have
sent her
this.
Back piece by piece until they
as we saw with Jaime and Brienne, there's definitely a difference on how they treat their guests.
And we do finally, after all this time, meet Beric Dondarrion. And it's funny because, obviously, it's been a long time since I read the books for the first time. I always remember Beric Dondarrion as being sort of like a bit of wallpaper on the back of the books, you know, not a major character. But Arya's odyssey to find him has made him loom larger and larger in my imagination, you know. Now he's a towering figure in the book, so important to everything, you know.
Yeah, yeah, he's certainly a good bit worse for wear when she sees him.
When he takes the shirt off, I remember the first time he was reported dead was at the Battle of the Mummers Ford, was it? Where he, was that right? Am I getting that right?
Yep,
where he
met
Sandor's brother, Gregor Clegane, and Gregor Clegane put a lance through him. And he was reported to be dead from that. Well, when he takes his shirt off for the fight with Sandor Clegane, Arya sees a big scar on the front of his chest. And when he turns round, she sees the corresponding scar on the back of his chest. So suddenly that story sounds more realistic now. Plus, the whole coming back to life thing gives it some credence as well. You know?
Certainly, yes. At the end of the chapter, yeah.
Yeah.
But when she first sees him, she thinks of him as the Scarecrow Knight because he's so thin. But then she also describes him as having a dented skull, protruding ribs, a dark ring around his neck. He's missing an eye, and he's got the crater in his chest that goes from the front through the back.
That's right. We heard he'd been hung too, right?
Yes.
At a different time. Yeah.
You
have a list of his deaths.
As we go along, I do have a list of his deaths,
good,
yes.
Good. We look forward to that.
And the thing, you can see how all these
wounds pieced together.
Wounds. Yes, exactly.
but also, wasn't he, I mean, so he sounds a bit of a mess, yeah, let's be honest. But if we remember, the first time we met him was in the throne room in King's Landing, and Jane Poole, who was Sansa's friend, she fell in love with him, right? She thought he was the most handsome.
Right.
Yeah, but
yes.
Not sure she would like the new version.
Yes, I think Arya says something along the lines of, even Jane couldn't be dumb enough to find him handsome or something along those lines. Sandor mentions, just kill me already. You know, if you're going to do it, just get it over with. You took my sword. You took my gold. You took my horse. And, you know, the sword and the gold are one thing, but we know that Sandor's horse, Stranger, is one of the things that he is most fond of in life. And to the point where after the battle, he lost his horse when he jumped off of the horse to help save, or not help save, but to save Sansa. And then he lost his horse in all of the rioting. He went out after the riot with Bronn to, as Tyrion wanted them to do, contain the fire in Fleabottom. But he said he was doing it only because he needed to go find his horse.
Right.
So he was willing to risk going into a fire situation to find Stranger.
Good recall so there. I'd forgotten that. But yes, he's fond of that horse. So this was... But yeah. I guess he probably thinks he's not getting out of here. He probably thinks he's doomed, you know.
Yes.
I will say that not for the first time, somebody who's got a lot to answer for is given a bit of a kangaroo trial that basically what he's being accused of, he legitimately can say, I had nothing to do with any of these things, because they list thing after thing that his brother did or the Lannisters generally did or... It's never him. The only person who has a legitimate beef against him actually is Arya. She's the only one who can actually come up with a real thing with the murder of Micah. But his defense against that one is fairly strong, which is, I was told that he'd attacked the prince and I was told to bring him back, you know, so he...
By royal lips.
Right, by the royal lips, exactly. So he's got... He's kind of covered. There's not an awful lot... His trial here feels almost as unfair as Tyrion's trial was in the Eyrie.
Right. Yes. And this trial reminded me of when Arya and Gendry and the other, their brave companion escorts, not brave companion, Brotherhood Without Banners escort, were sitting around that fire talking about what Beric Dondarrion would do with Jaime if they caught Jaime. And they made jokes about how Jaime, he would get a trial. And then they'd hang him.
Right.
So I'm wondering if this kangaroo court situation might be rather commonplace.
Yeah. So why then, given that they've decided that they can accuse him of whatever they want, why give him the trial by combat? Which, of course, given that it's Sandor Clegane, he's very likely to win.
Right. And you're risking Lord Beric Dondarrion here.
Right. Now, you know you've got a secret back door to bringing Beric Dondarrion back.
Right.
And is that it?
Get out of jail free card. Right.
Is that the point? That you actually want to demonstrate this to the unbelievers? Uh-huh. But it feels like that's a lot to ask of Beric Dondarrion, unless you come back stronger. It doesn't seem like he does. He seems to bear the wounds of all these previous deaths.
Yes, right.
Could you not just, like, stab me gently in the stomach? And then I'll come back.
Right. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm having trouble putting into words my thoughts on this decision here. I guess on one hand, I wonder if they hoped that seeing this miracle of him being, revived from death might move the Hound to join their cause, on one hand, or possibly Beric Dondarrion winning, and then the Hound is, maybe they're thinking of it as a win-win here. Either you defeat him, and, then we go about our business, and the Hound is dead, or he wins, I bring you back to life, and he is like, wow, these people are something special, I want to join this cause.
Yeah. Yeah.
And at the very least, maybe give him a glimpse into them not being just some run-of-the-mill band of broken men like he thinks
true,
they are.
But it just feels like a lot to ask of Beric, because Beric didn't die peacefully in his sleep here at the age of 90. He he caught it nastily in the shoulder. That's gonna smart forevermore.
We'll be right back.
This episode is sponsored by Audible. To get a free audiobook, or two if you're an Amazon Prime member, go to our exclusive URL, audibletrial.com/ghostsharrenhal. You can find the link in our show notes. Yeah, that's a good point. So, yeah, before they go down this road of trial by combat, or trial by battle, as they keep calling it in this chapter, they're talking about all of the, like you mentioned, all of the murders that Sandor has committed. And he was like, I didn't do any of this stuff. And somehow comes up about them being knights. And Sandor says, you're the only knight here is Beric Dondarrion. The rest of you all are just broken men. And, they explain that all of them have been knighted by Beric Dondarrion. All the men that you can
and
see.
And knights can knight other knights. That's
right. Yeah. And then Sandor kind of goes off and starts preaching his anti-knighthood views that he has preached so many times to Sansa. And most of the same concepts are covered, that knights are just pretty swords, but they're still tools for killing.
Yeah.
And, all the things he says, maybe you are knights. You lie like knights. Maybe you murder like knights. Then I was thinking he's preaching all this anti-knighthood views to these men who are all very much aligned with knighthood, since every single one of them has been knighted.
Yeah, but you might look around and go, he's got a point with some of these guys. I mean, like, if I was in a group of friends and they were all knights, I would be like, it's kind of belittled what a knighthood is, really.
That, yeah, I had that same thought. Like, maybe there should be some rules.
Right.
That a knight can make another knight under these circumstances, right.
And yeah, and it is ironic that they do blame Sandor for the sins of his brother and the Lannisters, because he's really got a rift with both of those now. I mean, he's been a Lannister man all along, but he fled the Battle of Blackwater in ignominious circumstances. And would no longer be a friend of the Lannisters. And he seems to despise his brother worse than anybody. So,
yeah.
It's not a matter of my enemies are my friends. It's like, I am being blamed for the sins of my enemies here.
Yeah, and it's also a bit hypocritical because a lot of the, well, we know at least a few of the named people who we've met were once had an allegiance that they no longer have. Harwin, for instance, he was a Stark man. He's no longer a Stark man. He explained to Arya why he's no longer a Stark man. He's a brother. He's part of the Brotherhood without banners. And, you know, even Beric Dondarrion is no longer supporting. If he, you know, he is from Blackhaven, which is in the Stormlands. So even just by general, who he owes fealty to would be the Baratheons. Right. But he's no longer supporting Stannis Baratheon. He's not supporting Joffrey Baratheon.
Yeah.
So, you know, and like you said, both Beric Dondarrion and Thoris have been in enough tournaments with both of the Cleganes to know the bad blood between the two of them. So it feels very false to tie the Mountain's actions to the other brother. But as I say that, on the other hand, it's also probably been incredibly frustrating for these men that they haven't done the one job they were sent out to do.
True.
Which is kill the Mountain. Yes. So killing his brother is at least something.
Good point.
You know, we killed a Clegane. We couldn't get the Mountain, but we got his little brother.
So you, come on, you've got a list then. Hit me with your list.
Okay, so yes, here are some of the people that they, the names of the people they throw out that the Lannisters or Gregor Clegane have killed. This list is so long, it nears Simon's pet peeve list as far as length, which is a reference to one of our wild fireside chats.
I should give the typed version to the Discord server so that people can see all of the things I didn't say.
We went through it at lunch on Tuesday.
Oh, you did? Okay.
I pulled up your bulleted list. A lot of people agreed with a lot of your list items.
Go.
Yeah. Yeah, how about that?
But remember, it wasn't pet peeves. It wasn't supposed to be pet peeves. That's where I ruined the brief. It was supposed to be things that people loved that you didn't get.
Right. Not... You just veered off into
pet peeves
eventually.
I was straight into pet peeves, yeah.
So keep in mind, Sandor did not kill any of these people particularly.
But well, Mr. Prosecution, I think you're going to have to do a better job than that.
Yeah, right. So here are some of the names that were thrown out. I just wanted to remind you who some of them were. One of the first names thrown out is Alyn of Winterfell. And we know Alyn. He took over for Jorah Cassel as captain of the Stark Household Guard. He was sent to lead the Stark men in this force of Beric Dondarrion's when they left King's Landing. In fact, Sansa was looking out the window and saw Alyn riding alongside Beric Dondarrion, carrying the Stark banner. And according to Harwin, which he told Arya this, I think it was back in like Arya 4 of this book, that during the battle at Mummer's Ford, when all hope seemed lost, Alyn restored order to the ranks that helped lead to one-third of the force escaping the ambush from the Mountain.
Including the left side of Beric Dondarrion.
Right, yeah. So that's Alyn of Winterfell. Sir Raymond Derry also gets mentioned. He was killed as well at the battle at Mummer's Ford. Then it's also said the young Lord Derry, that is likely Raymond's son Lyman, who's around nine-ish. He died after the Derry men had retaken Castle Derry, and then the Mountain took it back and put the whole castle to the sword, and he was the last male line of the Derry house. And they also say, Sir Raymond Derry, Lord Derry, and young Lord Derry. Now, Sir Raymond, he wasn't Lord Raymond, he was Sir Raymond Derry. So he did have a father who was Lord Derry. It's possible reference to his father. Okay. But it's unclear when his father died, and we have no name to attach to him. Then the Bastard of Bracken was mentioned. That is Harry Rivers. He is the natural-born son of Lord Jonas Bracken of Stonehenge.
Okay.
Sir Gladden Wild and Lord Lothar Mallory are the first two names thrown out there. And they were both chosen by Ned in the throne room of the Red Keep to go with Beric Dondarrion to bring the Mountain to justice. Both were killed at the Mummer's Ford. And there was four Pates listed, one of which was Old Pate. And Old Pate owned the cottage that Arya and Hot Pie and Gendry were where they were in their garden,
stealing,
I think, trying
garden,
to pick some.
Right.
Yes, when Lem and Anguy and Tom Sevens found them.
Yeah, so that is that's a long list of people he hasn't killed.
it is.
but you've put this in the notes, but it's a good point. He did brag to Sansa that he liked to murder women and children. But the thing is, what you say to impress someone shouldn't really be used against you in a court of law, one feels, because one might imagine, one might exaggerate the truth to put the fear of God into Sansa.
That is possible. Yeah. Yep. I went back and read that to see exactly what he said to her. She said to him, "Does it give you joy to scare people?" And he said, "No, gives me joy to kill people." And then he went on to say, "Killing is the sweetest thing there is. I killed my first man at 12, lost count since. I've killed high lords, rich knights, or the rich knights, something like that. Women, and yes, women and children, they're all meat, and I'm the butcher." So
okay.
Thankfully, there's no social media on Westeros, because I would have really hurt his case here in this trial. Had that been recorded.
That is an orgy of evidence you've presented.
Yes, it is.
But I wonder if this doesn't ring true. We know that Sandor Clegane has a bit of a soft heart. I wonder if this isn't true.
Yes.
I wonder if his reputation is slightly... He builds it up himself, but he's actually a bit of a softy who doesn't really do this kind of thing to people.
That could be.
It is strange that nobody can come up with a real-life example of him murdering someone other than himself.
Aside from
Micah. But again, I think his defense for Micah is realistic. Should Sir Ilyn Payne be tried for the murder of Ned Stark?
Not by the Lannister / Baratheon.
No, well, obviously not. But I mean, he wielded the sword, but he wasn't giving the command. And by that same token, Micah's death is not on Sandor's hands, but on Joffrey's.
Yeah, that is an idea I hadn't really thought about necessarily to the level which you just proposed it. And I like it. I like the
He certainly killed people. I mean, he fought in the battle and was definitely...
Right, but he was a soldier at that point.
Hmm.
Yeah. One thing I noticed that felt a little odd about this list of the dead is that Harwin didn't bring up Alan of Winterfell. Tom Seven Strings did. Harwin randomly brought up Lothar Mallory and Gladden Wild. You would think that Harwin would have been the one to mention his, his buddy from Winterfell.
I'm going to go to a reinforcement of the sundering of the previous ties. He no longer aligns himself with Winterfell. Alan was just one of his crew.
Just another brother.
So Beric uses a flaming sword, but it's not wildfire like Thoros of Myr is renowned to use. In actual fact, in the TV show, no, it's in both. I'm always having to pick this apart in my mind. In both, he cuts his hand, and it's his blood that sets it on fire. Which is really, that's really quite a cool image, the thought of that. Although, again, poor Beric.
Yeah.
If you wanted the Hound dead, we could have done this with a lot less pain and a lot less blood.
Why don't I have to cut myself
and then
every
get
time
killed?
I wanna light my sword? But it seems the fire that this sword lights with isn't wildfire, obviously, but it's also not some sort of like glamour type trick because it burns the Hound. So it's actual fire. So, but it's also clearly not Lightbringer because it breaks, which is what causes
you need to go
Beric Dondarrion's death.
Turbo Mott. No, he's not called Turbo Mott. Tovo.
Right.
That's right.
Tovo, but close enough.
That's why you pay for the expensive sorts.
That is right. But, you know, I possibly part of the reason that they decided to do this trial by combat is that they know the Hound well enough to know that flames give
against
Beric Dondarrion an advantage to the point where he felt he was going to win.
Yeah, they would have seen the Hound's reaction to fire enough to know that it was a good tool to use against him. But again, it goes to their motivation here. Were they trying to win? Were they trying to lose? It's hard to tell.
Exactly. But the stage was set pretty well for Beric here because there was a flaming sword on one side of the Hound and a huge bonfire on the other side. So that's
Arya
not
really
ideal.
Arya wanted the Hound to die in this fight. No question about it. To the point of sort of foaming at the mouth. Occasionally you look at a crowd in one of these WWF things and you see some lunatic who's lost their mind. It was Arya.
It was. At one point she was chanting, kill him, kill him, kill him.
We worry about her mental state, and this hasn't reassured us very much.
No, it was a little bit disturbing, just how badly she wanted the Hound to die. I know he killed Micah, and he killed him in cold blood, and she has had him in her nightly prayers of people that she wants dead for a long time. But
The other thing is, she's got a long list, and she's had very little chance to exact any revenge, and so the thought of it being that close must have been very sweet.
Yes. Right.
Clegg,
sure.
Hound is burned. I mean, it's mostly the fire is on his shield, but he can't shake the shield off, so he ends up getting his arm burnt as a result of all this, which, again, I've occasionally touched element of a thingamajig that really hurts, and it makes me unhappy for a long time. To be actually burned by fire would hurt tremendously, and to be burnt by fire when you've already been horribly burnt and disfigured by fire would add a psychological element to that. I have some sympathy for Sandor Clegane here.
Yes, I do too. Very traumatic experience for him being in this combat, which involves fire so heavily, just generally. But then, you know, to be badly burned again, it just... And I felt like it immediately took him back to the little boy being burned by the fire by his brother. Just very quick reminder, his brother pushed his face into... Was it into the fire? I honestly can't remember how he...
If it wasn't
exactly
fire, it was hot coals, so it did damage.
Yes, something like that. So, and, you know, Vanessa had another thought she shared, and she mentioned this is a tough fear for the Hound to have, considering that all illumination in Westeros is done by fire. You know, torches and candles even, everything is lit by fire.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So everywhere he goes, fire.
If during the summer you could go north of the wall, if... You know, again, we haven't quite figured out what happens with sunset and sunrise, but, you know, sort of like, if the sun never sets, you wouldn't need any fires. It'd be nice.
Oh, right. Yeah. You know, one thing about this brotherhood, so we don't get exactly a count of how many there are in this cave here, but it feels like there's a decent amount. And he says, Beric says, and Thoris says that, you know, they're all kind of... subject. I don't, they're all they all believe in the Lord of Light. R'hllor faithful, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And so, you know, this group, this Brotherhood Without Banners, it possibly rivals Selyse Baratheon's Queen's Men for the largest group of Lord of Light followers in Westeros.
And again, I feel like they've come to it more naturally. You know what I mean? I think that the Florence, there was a bit of politics in their decision. I think there's some pretty strong adherence now, but I think these guys believe because they believe. You know, they've been given reason to believe.
Yeah, and they've seen more than Melisandre's people have.
I've just realized I was pestering you for a list, but I pestered you for the wrong list. I'd forgotten the list you were going to give me was the list of the deaths of Beric Dondarrion.
Right, the six deaths of Beric Dondarrion.
Yeah, that's a good title. Good name for a band.
So, first death.
Mummers
Ford. Yes, impaled by a lance. By the mountain. We've gotten multiple instances of hearing about this death. The most vivid was the one Harwin gave us to Arya. But first, the first time we heard about it, I think, was Rob was telling Kat about it at Moat Cailin when they first met, I think. Okay, so that's number one. We can see that scar. Goes right through him, one side out the other. Second, smashed with a mace on the side of the head by Sir Burton Crakehall. We got that information, I believe, in Cat 1 of A Clash of Kings. So, okay. One of the first chapters of Clash of Kings. And she notices, Arya notices, that Beric Dondarrion has a dent in his head. It's a bald dent in his head. Number three, he was hanged at Rushing Falls by Sir Aemery Lorch. Arya 7 of A Clash of Kings. Okay. That was when she was at Harrenhal. Number four, stabbed in the eye with the dirk by the mountain.
Ouch.
Again, same chapter from Arya 7 of Clash of Kings at Harrenhal. Number five, killed by Vargo Hoat of the Brave Companions. Same chapter. Arya 7 of Clash of Kings.
Bad chapter for Beric.
Yeah, and now killed by the Hound in a trial by combat. Mm-hmm. So that gives us six deaths of Beric Dondarrion. But we all know that in A Song of Ice and Fire, seven is a pretty sacred number. So might the seventh death be a significant one in some way?
Or is he a cat? Nine.
Nine. Oh, he might get nine. I hope for Beric's sake there isn't a seventh death. But at the rate he's going, it's starting to seem like a trend here.
Yes, so I think so.
Maybe the next captive that they get will be death number seven.
Yeah. And it was clear all along that there was more to these rumors of his death than just pure rumor. It felt like there was something magical, and now it does seem like the rumors were basically true. It's just that the people giving the rumors didn't know the end game of it, which was that Thoros of Mir could somehow bring him back to life again. The question is it limited to Beric Dondarrion, and if so, why? Or can he do it to anyone? If Beric had won the fight, was he going to bring the Hound back?
Oh. Right. Yeah. Then he would, you know, the Hound would owe him his life.
Yeah, yeah.
Literally.
Are you going to stay with us? All right. Kill him again.
This time I won't bring you back.
Exactly. All right. Do you have some background for us?
I do. There wasn't a great deal
I
of
can rely
background.
On you, Kelly.
I came through. That's right. So when throwing out names of the dead being laid at the Hound's feet, Sir Audrey Charlton is named. And there's not much about him other than what we got here, which is that he was a knight and he was killed by the Lannisters. However, I can give you some info about his house. So, House Charlton is a Riverlands house that was once fairly powerful. They participated in many important battles back in the day, including the Battle at Fairmarket on the side of Harwin Hoare against Storm King Eric Durandon, which was a victory for the House Charlton side. They fought on the side of Aegon II against his uncle Maegor's forces in the Battle Beneath the God's Eye. That was a resounding defeat on the Charlton side. And finally, during the Dance of the Dragons, House Charlton fought for Rhaenyra and the Blacks in the battle by the lakeshore, which was a victory of sorts. Mm-hmm. Lord John Charlton did die in that battle. So, depends on the perspective whether or not it was a victory.
Not a big victory for Lord John Charlton.
Right. Nowadays, however, they've fallen in stature to merely vassal lords to the Freys of the Crossing. In fact, Walder Rivers, Lord Walder's oldest natural-born son, who I will mention we will see again very soon, is married to a Charlton.
Oh, interesting.
The house's sigil is three sprigs of mistletoe on a gold background with a green border. And here's a noteworthy aside, a mentionable aside, if you will. It is thought that House Charlton might be a nod by George Martin to Charlton Comics, which he read in his youth and contained some of his favorite characters, Blue Beetle, Peter Cannon, and Thunderbolt. Charlton Comics were eventually acquired by DC Comics, which could possibly be mirrored in House Charlton, the once powerful, being relegated to vassals of the Freys.
So the Freys are DC in this?
Yes, I guess so. Okay. They're Superman. Mm-hmm. Wait a second. Are we saying... what are we saying here?
So, as I spoiled earlier, the comparison with the television show is remarkably similar. I mean, like, you know, every character is present. The fight is exactly as described, down to the burning of the shield and the burning of the arm. The only thing is that they don't drag the body of Dondarrion away. He goes down. They all sort of look horrified, kind of thing.
He pops back up.
We cut to the Hound, sort of like getting rid of it. And then Dondarrion talks to him again, and sort of everyone's agog at this. But yeah, it's...
Everyone is. Everyone. Not just the Hound and Arya and Gendry.
Yes, those people are agog. The crew are like, we knew that was coming.
Pretty cool trick, huh? Mm-hmm. Got you there.
Yep. So yeah, as I said, I wonder if the importance of this is something that I've forgotten how important it is, because the TV show really made an effort to capture everything down to the dialogue.
Something we'll have to keep an eye on for sure.
Pedantry Corner, I don't have anything, but you have something.
Yes. So stay with me here.
Okay.
So I have written down the Knights of Hollow Hill, because that's what they call themselves. The Brotherhoods Without Banners also refer to themselves as the Knights of Hollow Hill. And like I mentioned earlier, I think it was Lem, I don't know, it's Tom or Lem, I think it was Lem, says that this cave is a place that they come where they know that no lions or wolves will come prowling around. So, it seems like a place that all Brotherhood Without Banner members know of, like their headquarters, sort of. So, when they spent multiple chapters roaming through the Riverlands, randomly trying to bump into Beric Dondarrion, why did they not think about sending a scout to check this place first, before just randomly roaming around hoping to find him?
Michele, I've noticed that when you have pedantry, you often caveat it with, well, I'm not sure. And then you come up with the prime cuts of pedantry. That is completely right. You're absolutely right.
Well, thank you. I'm glad that you followed along with what I was suggesting there.
All this time. And it's not like that much happened to Arya on the trip. She learned some things from Harwin. We could have just had one long chapter with that, you know?
Yeah.
Very strange.
Yeah. You know, our one star rating on
pedantry.
Apple Podcasts is about pedantry. So I try to be, cover my bases here before I launch into any pedantry.
Do you have some news and notes?
There is a little bit of news and notes. So a new movie is headed to the big screen based off of George Martin's work. No, unfortunately, we're not going to see Arya and the Hound on the big screen yet. Rather, the film In the Lost Lands is a story about a sorceress who can get you anything you want if you're dumb enough to buy it from her. It's based off of a short story that Martin wrote in 1982 about a character named Grey Alice. The movie stars Mila Jovovich as Grey Alice, as well as Dave Bautista. They've just wrapped filming, but there's a ton of special effects to add in post-production, so Martin doesn't expect it to hit the theaters until 2024, which will be a big year for Martin, because that's when we're expected to get the second season of House of the Dragon as well.
Okay. There was a snarky comment coming there, but I won't say it.
Oh, how could you resist? I've never seen you resist a snarky comment.
By the plot of this story, so she can get you anything you want if you're dumb enough to pay her for it. Why would it be dumb? Do you know what the payment is? Is the payment very high?
I don't know. I think the term that Martin used was like foolish enough to buy from her. So. I don't know exactly.
Well, you got to read the small print. That's clearly it. And when's your wedding anniversary, Michele?
It is August 31st.
August 31st. And this year will be 24?
Yes, it will.
Yeah. So me and you are 24, not to each other. But George Martin and his wife Paris celebrated their 12th wedding anniversary this week, so we're twice what they are.
That is, yeah, you're right. Mm. The math adds up. It does. And you know something I noticed? If you do the math, that means that they were married in 2011.
Okay.
February 15th of 2011.
Okay.
Well, you know what else happened in 2011?
Do tell.
A Dance with Dragons was published in 2011. The last book that we've gotten from George Martin in the A Song of Ice and Fire world. Well,
so it's not story, the TV anyway. Show that's turned its head. It's Paris.
Could it be? That's quite the coincidence, isn't it? He got married the same year that the last book he ever wrote in the A Song of Ice and Fire story came out.
Uh-huh. And don't forget, if you're ever considering getting Audible, if you use our show link, you get a 30-day free trial plus a book. And two, if you're an Amazon Prime member. So that's audibletrial.com/ghostsharrenhall. So check it out if you want to become an Audible member.
Yep, I think the link is in our show notes. Okay, but
cool. All right.
If not, audibletrial.com/ghostsharrenhall.
Yeah. Let's conclude. So Arya didn't get her dreams answered, unfortunately. She was close. I mean, it was a good fight. I thought the Hound was going to just smite him immediately, but Beric put up a good fight and almost won. I mean, I do think he was clever in his setting and his knowing his enemy, but ultimately the size and strength won out.
Yeah, that's what happened. I mean, the sword broke. Yeah. Sandor used a two-handed downward chop. Yeah. It broke through the sword and into Beric.
Which, again,
Beric.
TV but, show. Exactly that happened. Exactly that.
Wow. Yeah. That's really cool. Imagine how Beric would have done if he had two eyes.
Yeah, probably never saw it coming. Would have.
Yeah. I can't remember which side the attack, the chop came down on. But if I were to guess, I'd say it was the blind eye side.
So the Hound lives. But so does Beric Dondarrion. And it seems that Thoros maybe was involved in that. And Thoros has said that he's a real priest of Relor now. And so it certainly feels like it's that. Does Melisandre have the same power in her toolbox? We know she's got pretty good magic, but we haven't seen her do this before.
She hasn't mentioned it. But if she does have this capability, then it was an incredibly bad idea for Stannis not to bring her to the Battle of the Blackwater.
Particularly because what happened when he left her at home was she went off in a snit and woke up Renly Baratheon and had him come back.
That's how Renly's ghost was out there.
That does explain it, actually. I mean, that's still not been explained to me, has it? Have I missed that?
No, it has not been explained yet.
Okay, so there you go. That's working theory. Melisandre got her revenge. Yes. Leave me at home. I'll show you.
Arya, though, she's finally reached at least her temporary destination.
Yes.
So what happens now? I assume
she marches all the way back to Riverrun, where she just came from, basically.
Right. Is Beric going to say, why? Why would you come all the way this far south? You were right there.
Where are we going next, Michele?
So next week, we are going to take a trip just slightly north. We're going to take a trip that Arya would love to take. Yes. We're going to Riverrun to check in on Kat. And we say goodbye, a final goodbye to a character. Okay. And she gets news about one of her daughters.
Okay.
I won't tell you which one.
Do you remember the innocent days of yore when you used to eulogize every character who died? And now there's just too many.
There is too many. Oh, and Rob gets an answer to a question that he asked.
Okay. All right. Look forward to that.
So you're going to want to check in. Yes.
So there's three ways that you could help us. You could leave us a positive review. There's no better way of spreading the word. You could buy merchandise at ghostsofharrenhall.threadless.com. You could buy us a cup of Arbor Gold at buymeacoffee.com/ghostsharrenhall and become a sustainer at the Lord Paramount Knight of the Realm level to reap the benefits.
That's right. And of course, You can always reach us at ghost.herrenhall@gmail.com. But we'd also like you to go out and follow us on Twitter at Ghost Herrenhall. We're also on Facebook, Instagram, Discord, where we have so much fun.
We do.
And we're on YouTube. Please don't forget to watch and subscribe to our YouTube stuff.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.